Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to DearHoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to DearHoffman.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. Together we answer your questions each week in our Q&A with Layla. And you can send questions via radio program at AOL.com. And in addition, you can be beneficiary of a consult from Layla. She, unlike me, can communicate with you telephonically. Perform a nutrition consult as long as you have a doctor and you have medical supervision. So if you want to come see me, please do. You'll also have the opportunity to see Layla, as all my patients do. But if you want to, if you're a listener from another part of the country, or if you want to economize on a medical visit and you already have a doctor, you can access her services via drhoffman.com. Learn about how to become a patient there. And you can do that. It's actually quite a few people are availing themselves of that opportunity, right, Lila?
Yes, yes. It's all growing. It's all good. Yeah. I'm very happy to meet all of you.
So what do you do? You know, when I see a patient mm-hmm. and I want a medical test, you know, I just order the medical test. What do you do when, say, you really want to know, for example, you see a patient and you suspect they might have prediabetes, and you want to do a blood test, but, you know, you're a nutritionist, so you can't order them.
Yes.
But what do you do?
What I do, and I always like to make sure that I have the most recent labs, not older than, say, 6 months old, and say they have diabetes, prediabetes, high blood sugar, and I would send them back to their physician, most often their primary care, sometimes their cardiologist, depending on their condition, with a request for blood tests.
Mm-hmm.
And I often get it. Sometimes I want to look at a hemoglobin A1C. Maybe I want to look at C-peptide. Maybe I want to look at ferritin. These are things that typically doctors do or don't do, or it's not in the regular blood tests that patients come to me with, which is typically a comprehensive metabolic panel and a complete blood count, typically.
And are the doctors... go ahead.
Yeah. The doctors comply. You know, they know that the patient is under my care, and they have my phone number, my fax number, and they write the order for the blood test. The patient is able to get the blood test and then follow up with me, so I can take care of them nutritionally.
And are the doctors happy or resentful that the patient
yes.
is seeing you?
No. Actually, I'll tell you a little story. This was several years ago where I had a patient. I sent her back to her cardiologist requesting a homocysteine. Well, she came back to me. The homocysteine was not done, although the other requested blood tests were. And when I asked why, she said, I spoke with the cardiologist, and she said, there's not enough scientific evidence. And so I sent her lots and lots of citations about the importance of homocysteine as a risk factor in cardiovascular disease. Well, she was very happy and has been sending me patients ever since.
Oh, that's great. Okay, and that really illustrates that there really shouldn't be a turf war in medicine, is that physicians... You know, unfortunately, because of their background, because of the enormous number of facts they need to crunch to get into their specialties in medicine, they may not have a time to drill down and learn all facets of nutrition. So they should be happy and grateful that somebody's attending to the nutritional requirements of their patients.
Yeah. I believe, as you already do, Dr. Hoffman, that a nutrition consult should be mandatory, because that's why I have this Chinese proverb on the wall of my office. Let me read it.
Yep.
The patient who doesn't pay attention to the diet is wasting the physician's time.
Amen.
You know? Yeah. It's like Dr. David Perlmutter said at a recent conference, you know, my dog was sick. I brought the dog to the vet, and the vet's first question was, what are you feeding him? That should right. be the first question to right. us humans as well. What are you eating? What are you doing?
Or as I
How
sometimes
you
say,
living your life?
As I sometimes say in my gastrointestinal lectures, you know, when your toilet gets clogged and you call, Tony the plumber, and Tony comes over and looks at the toilet that's all backed up and says, "Hey, lady, what'd you throw in the toilet?" That's the first question to ask. But unfortunately, you go to the gastroenterologist and you got some terrible, god-awful gastrointestinal distress, and your doctor may never get around to asking you what you're eating. You know, it's like, well, let's see, what medication can I give you to alleviate your problems?
And worse, they will say, diet doesn't matter. You need to take this medicine the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Without any change in diet. I have seen some GI patients where they have gastroenterologists in this day and age, it's horrifying to me, who say, "Oh, no, I don't agree with the diet you're doing."
Oh, I see.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Meanwhile, the patient's getting better. What do you have to say to that? Anyway, I'm off my soapbox. Okay.
Okay. Enough of a rant. Let's get
right.
to questions.
Yes. We've got a question from Joel. I had two bone grafts in my upper jaw to keep from losing teeth, one of which was an implant. Mm-hmm. I used the Spry dental system, and I have periodontal work, you know, as necessary to prevent and minimize bone loss due to periodontal disease. Can Ostinol, and he heard the podcast with James Scafidi, can Ostinol rebuild bone in my jaw, or does it only work on osteoporosis in the long bones?
The answer is, and I can't say that I know of specific studies on that condition, which is actually pretty common. You know, a lot of people have bone erosion in the jaw, and that can happen for several reasons. One reason is because of dental work and because of dental problems. It can also happen because of generalized bone loss throughout the body. Some, you know, it's really worthwhile looking at people who have bone erosion in their jaw to see if they have generalized osteoporosis. And in addition, we now have a subset of people, it's rare, but it's devastating, who take medications like Fosamax, Actonil, Boniva, or Reclast, and they develop a dire condition called osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is death yeah. of the bone cells in the jaw, which is absolutely a devastating condition, and you know, for which there is no good conventional treatment. So what Ostinol is, and it's a new product that we are stocking at drhoffman.com, and I've interviewed the CEO of the company, James Scafidi, and I really found the science very exciting and very compelling. You know, sometimes, you know, there's a product and it makes some outrageous claims, but the company that makes this, Zycal, Z-Y-C-A-L, actually is reinvesting some of their money, and I think they have, like, some private equity seed money into doing research that will validate the efficacy of the product. And that's, I always appreciate that, because it's all too seldom in the field of natural medicine that proper research is undertaken to substantiate claims. I mean, not that there's not research, but, you know, because these drugs are sometimes hard to patent, and, you know, say you prove that resveratrol is helpful, well, everybody else is going to knock you off. Well, what Ostinol is it's a protein fragment, a polypeptide, that is a bone morphogenetic protein, which signals the bone to grow and remineralize. And so that may have efficacy in osteoporosis. It certainly has efficacy in fractures. That's where this originated. It actually originated in the surgical field as sort of a magic dust that they would apply to fractures when they did surgery, so that bones would heal. But then they figure out a way to create an oral delivery system that they validated. It seems to be well absorbed, although these proteins sometimes are hard to be absorbed intact by the body. But the studies show that it is absorbed. And then it travels to where it's needed to help to stimulate bone repair. So the other interesting thing, and I'm beginning to explore this, is the use of this stuff for patients with osteoarthritis and even rheumatoid arthritis. because there are preliminary studies that show that this may be helpful. And because this, there may be some general repair effect, perhaps an anti-inflammatory effect that this stuff possesses. Again, it's early. Research is underway, and we need more research partners to take up the challenge and do the clinical studies. But I think that Austanol is a promising new player on the osteoporosis front, and I welcome it because we are very successful at osteoporosis treatment. We have some wonderful tools, in particular strontium. For some patients we need, and I've occasionally, strontium's not enough, and I'm always looking for something that will give the patients that extra added benefit in terms of bone repair. Many of the patients that we see, they either prefer not to take medication because they're concerned about side effects, or they have taken medication and they've experienced undesirable side effects, or the medications have failed to adequately restore bone density.
Yes, absolutely.
So Austanol, Ostinol, look for it at drhoffman.com. You can order it. And, it's, I think, a new promising story.
Yeah.
Oh, so
and
let's
Joe,
talk a little. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, in addition to the periodontal disease that Joel has, lots and lots of CoQ10 has been found to be helpful.
For periodontal disease.
For periodontal disease, not necessarily for the bone graft and so forth. But
if he's talking about bone repair, actually some of those same things that we use for osteoporosis may be beneficial, like Ostera and vitamin D, and certainly strontium may be helpful there too.
MK7.
So, yeah, mm-hmm. MK7, vitamin K. By the way, very interesting and good studies on vitamin K and bone enhancement. One study in particular that I recall, it's an older study from, I think, last year that shows that there was a reduction in the decline in vertebral height in women who took vitamin K alone.
Wow.
So that's significant, right? You know, that shrinkage that occurs with aging.
Yes.
So this is, I think it was a Dutch study that the Dutch are really way ahead in vitamin K research. Possibly because, vitamin K is a component of aged cheese, and
yes.
There's nothing like those aged Dutch cheeses. So they seem to be very attuned to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Joel has a second question. This is about e-cigarettes.
Okay.
Now, he knows, Dr. Hoffman, that you're not a fan of e-cigarettes and that you have said, let's see if this is correct. You say that e-cigarettes are a gateway to real smoking.
Absolutely.
Particularly for teens who currently don't smoke. I believe that. What if someone is already a smoker and turns to e-cigarettes as part of a program to quit?
Mm-hmm.
Nicotine aside, can e-cigarette vapor be worse than so many of the chemicals found in cigarette smoke?
It's probably not worse, and it may be better than smoking cigarettes. So what the ideal use of e-cigarettes is in people who are smokers and they can't stop cold and they want to do a gradual program of harm reduction. So, I see this all over the place now. People, these big billows of smoke are coming out of these devices and people are like reloading them, putting the drops of the nicotine liquid in there so that they can toke up on the street. And so there are a couple problems.
Wow.
One is nicotine problematic? I actually think that nicotine is the least problematic of all the issues associated with e-cigarettes because there are actually some studies that show nicotine may be beneficial for the brain. It may ward off Parkinson's disease. I'm not opposed to nicotine replacement in people who chew the gum or use the patch or inhale the vapor. However, a couple things happen with those devices. One is very high temperatures occur within those devices, and I'm not sure how much plastic or metal gets aerosolized into the vapor, and or some of these carrier chemicals, because there are vehicles that help the solubilization and delivery of the nicotine. I mean, it's not pure nicotine, obviously. It's nicotine in a vehicle. So inhaling whatever that stuff is, we really have to analyze what the effects are long term. Probably less bad than burning tobacco leaves with all the additives and tar and so on. Certainly, there's not a lot of tar. But
yeah, not to mention the pesticides and stuff, but it's really interesting you talk about the heat component, and if there is plastic present, which I believe there is, that could release dioxin, which is a known carcinogen.
Yeah, and other, you know, phthalates and, you know, other...
Right, it's like putting plastics in the microwave.
Yes.
Or something to some degree.
So that's a problem. And and also, there actually are studies that suggest that there may be damage to what's called the endothelium, which is the lining of the arteries, due to inhaling this hot chemical mixture laced with nicotine. And so, you know, does it cause cancer? You know, maybe to a lesser extent than cigarettes. Could it cause cardiovascular disease? Yeah, certainly that's a possibility. This is a big uncontrolled experiment that we've unleashed on the American public. And the troublesome aspect of it is the demographics. It's mostly really young kids who are using this. It's not being used as intended. You know, the way it's intended is it's supposed to be for people to get off cigarettes. Well, you know, maybe 10 or 20% of the people who use these things are intending to get off cigarettes. But the other, 80% are kids who are experimenting with nicotine. They think it's cool and they're getting hooked on nicotine. And, eventually, they may pick up, a carton of Marlboros and start, smoking away.
Yeah. Right. Unfortunately.
Gateway drug.
Yeah. Yeah. Joel, thank you very much for your questions. Okay. We've got one from Mark. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm a 70-year-old male in reasonably good health. I had a CT heart scan performed when I was 64 years of age, and I received an excellent report with a calcium score of zero.
Can I pause on that for a minute?
Yeah.
I'm going to pause on that for a minute. I actually just saw a patient yesterday who's a radiologist, and we talked about this because, this patient is a little concerned about his cardiovascular risk. He had a scan which showed a little bit of plaque. So we're working on cardiovascular prevention. There are two technologies that are used for ascertaining this. One is what's called the EBT heart scan, and the other is the coronary CAT scan. And this guy knows all the ins and outs about radiology, and he's very aware that you get about 10 times as much radiation from the coronary CAT scan than you do from the EBT. And we know that CAT scans have many times more radiation than ordinary chest X-rays. And if you go in, every couple of years and you get a CAT scan to see if you have coronary plaque, you're going to accumulate a lot of X-rays. And actually, studies show that on average, this increases the average exposure of Americans to radiation from diagnostic procedures, increases their risk of cancer by as much as 10%. Just that alone.
Wow.
That alone. So typically what will happen is you go with a prescription for an EBT scan, which is the lower radiation thing, then you go to the average radiology practice, and they say, well, we don't have that, but you can get the CAT scan. It's even better. Well, that's the equipment they have. They can also claim more reimbursement from the insurance company. But
that's
you're going to get more radiation.
Driver.
So we send people to the few places that still have EBT scanners that deliver less radiation, and they give us the same information we want. We want to know your calcium score. If it's zero, that's great. And this guy's calcium score was zero?
It was zero 6 years ago, and
awesome.
He's 70 now.
Okay.
And he's wondering, will that zero score change over time? Should I get another CT scan?
Great question.
What should I do?
And the answer is, the answer is, if you're 70, even if it has progressed, the fact that in your mid-60s you had a zero score is prognostically very good. It's very hard to imagine that you could go from zero to a meaningful score, a high-risk score, in a matter of just even a decade. And so this is the kind of patient that I might say, hey, just don't worry about it, because chances are that you'll accumulate significant plaque at the age of 123. where it won't matter. You know, right? I mean, it might gradually accumulate. But, hey, you know, generally, even centenarians, people who live, you know, into their hundreds, they have some plaque. It's the stability of the plaque that really governs the risk of a heart attack or stroke. Yeah. So this guy, I would say, for some reason, either it's a merit system, he was very careful, he did the right thing, or else genetically he's protected against heart disease, because it's actually the exception rather than the rule. To see a male in their 60s with a zero score is a fortunate guy. He's doing the right thing for himself.
I want to mention, Dr. Hoffman, Mark has had a high total cholesterol and LDL. He says they've always been on the high side.
Yep.
You want to hear some numbers?
Yeah.
His total was 229. His LDL was 121.
Yeah.
But he's blessed with a high HDL of 99.
Wow. That's very unusual for a guy. That's really superb. And you know what that illustrates is that if we did this in sort of a knee-jerk or paint-by-numbers fashion, you know, we say, okay, here's a middle-aged guy, his cholesterol's high, go on a statin, right? But he did the right thing, and perhaps he's a listener to this program. This is what we do in the office. We will help to differentiate which patients are at risk and which patients aren't at risk by doing the EBT heart scan, which actually looks at, you know, where the rubber meets the road, which actually looks at whether you have the endpoint, which is calcium plaque. Actually, the endpoint is whether you're going to live or die. I mean, and there's actually a little bit of a dissociation between the presence of plaque and your risk of dying, because some people with moderate plaque seem to be survivors, and some people with minimal plaque could have problems. But a person with zero plaque is virtually bulletproof from the standpoint of cardiovascular disease.
Wow. Wonderful. Mark, good for you. Continued good health to you, and thank you for your question.
So, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for today's Q&A with Lila. Besides, I have soup on the stove. I'm making some soup. Okay, here's what I ate a couple of chickens this week, and what I do is, you know, I eat all the chicken. I eat as close to the bone as I can, but there's some leftovers, so I throw the leftovers in a bag and put them in the refrigerator. And then I render them down in a crock pot. So I was very proud that I got this really nice chicken broth. And chicken broth can't go to waste. So, and this,
chicken,
by the way, I keep it in the
crock
pot for like 24 hours, 36 hours. And then I filter it out with a colander. And then, so what I did was I had some orange lentils sitting around. I threw that into the pot. Some sautéed onions and carrots. I have some fresh rosemary from my garden, so I chopped that up. I added a little cumin to give it sort of a Middle Eastern flavor.
Nice.
And a little touch of nutmeg. And thrown a lot of garlic in the pot. A couple of tomatoes that were going bad, I chopped them up. Threw them in there. A couple of small potatoes to thicken it up a little bit. I diced the potatoes. And then we have the open market today. So I went and got something called purple kale. It's called Russian purple kale. So it's really rich with phytonutrients. And I just chopped that up finely and threw it in the pot. And it's sitting there, and the aroma is very enticing. I think I'm going to turn off the stove and make myself a cup of soup. Maybe
there you go.
Maybe put some, I have some organic chorizo. You know what that is? That's like a spicy sausage. Yes, chorizo.
Oh, or is it harissa?
Chorizo.
Chorizo.
Well, okay. It's a Spanish sausage, but there's a company that makes...
chorizo.
Chorizo, yeah, right.
I understand. No, chorizo's great.
Right.
Or chorizo. Yeah.
Yeah, so that may be lunch for me.
There you go.
And we ought to put some recipes up at drhoffman.com. When I get a chance, I'll try and put some of those down.
Yeah.
But
wonderful.
That's my phytonutrient soup that I'm going to enjoy this lunchtime. All right. So thanks very much for joining us, Layla. And
thank
a reminder,
you, Dr. Hoffman.
To our listeners, these podcasts are free. We enjoy doing them. We love to get the information out to you. But in order to help subsidize them, please... patronize our sponsors, and also check out our website at drhoffman.com. We've got a store. You can get many of the products that we talk about here at drhoffman.com. and you can help yourself and also support the continuation of these podcasts by ordering your nutrient supplements from drhoffman.com. Click on the store, check it out. Our prices are competitive, and we got lots of great stuff there. Thanks again, Layla. And hey, happy Thanksgiving to our listeners and to you, Layla, and to your family.
Thank you. You too, Dr. Hoffman. Everyone enjoy. Have a happy and safe one.
Indeed. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.